Breaking, this just in, FGC Cast is now live and you're listening to the best podcast absolutely out here telling you the news like it is. I am one of your two hosts, Da Purple Sharpie, and I am joined by...
Saki Sakura, the news is right off, hot off the presses, so you better not go anywhere because we got lots to talk about, including, that's right, the long-awaited recap of Evo Japan.
Let's get into it, Saki. What happened this past Evo Japan? Because I know there is a ridiculous amount of news that broke at Evo Japan. Do you want to talk to us about it?
I'm ready. Let's go for it, Sharpie. So first off and first most, really shout outs, honestly, to the TO groups and everybody that was hosting and helping out with Evo Japan. It was insane. A lot of people were very, very happy with how Evo Japan went this year compared to last year. Last year, there was a lot of complaints about how the venue wasn't really well suited. It was very full and difficult to kind of maneuver and navigate, and you know, even setups were not the best, or rather accustomed to what you're used to in international or North American tournaments. Well, this year they came out swinging. Plus, who also came out swinging was Meta RD Tempest. That's right, the NA dominates Street Fighter 6 and Guilty Gear Strive. I think, Sharpie, that's probably the biggest news out of this whole Evo Japan part. NA beating Japan in both Street Fighter 6 and Guilty Gear Strive. Like, do you understand how crazy that is? That we're always talking about how Asia and Japan are like the dominant in these games, and we come out on top. And yes, we're claiming Mena RD because he's in the States now. So he is North American all the way now.
No, we deserve it. Honestly, it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm always so surprised, because by the time that Evo Japan comes out, very frequently we have a whole discussion about like how the United States never represents. Even like last year, to be honest with you, didn't we have a whole discussion with like Rob TV talking about, oh yeah, by the way, like literally like we never get to see Americans, like they just don't train the right way. And this year we have both Tempest and Mena showcasing inside of Japan as being the best in the world, not just inside of North America for Evo, but also in Evo Japan, a place that's specifically focused on like Japanese talent. It's like their home country. That's crazy.
It's insane. And you brought up such a good point about what Rob TV brought out. Like, I think Evo Japan has been one of these stops, not just for tours, but just straight up, like, it's one of these high climatic, this is where you have to come out if you want to be considered the best, versus like, you know, we're always saying, oh, you have to go to Evo, you have to go to Combo Breaker, you have to go to CEO, you have to go to all of these North American majors, and then like one or two that are in the EU and in Latin America, and that's really like about it. But no, Evo Japan is like, it's starting to be this really premier prestige tournament. You know, another thing too, Sharpie, I'm not sure if you were aware of this, this was the first year they actually charged venue and entry.
Oh, wow.
For the tournament. So, you know, here in North America, and of course in many of the tournaments in the EU, we're used to paying for our entry fee into the tournament and then our venue, right? Well, for the last year or so, not last year or so, but a couple of years back up until last year, Evo Japan was one of those you could sign up basically for free, as long as I believe if you paid for the venue, and that was pretty much it. Japan is very strict about tournaments and prize pools. It's also kind of why, like, when you look at the prize pools for Evo Japan, they weren't crazy amount of money, because Japan's very, very strict about just gambling laws and gaming in general when you're trying to compete for them. But because of, you know, so many people going on to socials and actually saying, hey, like, we spent so much money to be going out here, and this was the experience that we got, Evo was like, you know what, we usually don't actually interact, or we don't usually enter into Evo Japan. Like, it's just like a sub with using the name Evo. It's really like Roto that deals with Evo Japan.
Yeah.
This year we're gonna come in and we're gonna make sure that you have a good experience. And they did exactly that. Plus on top of that, like all the panels, you could see all the content. Even like there was moments where you had like players like Justin Wong interviewing people on the floor.
Yeah.
Just visiting the 2XKO booth. It was pretty good. It was pretty cool.
I just want to say as an aside, I was really happy to see Justin, especially like conducting interviews, because I've always felt like, especially there's a very low crossover rate from like professional players becoming content creators. I'm happy Justin made the swap, and I'm also happy that now they have him as like a host slash interviewer, because he understands games significantly more at a higher level than a lot of us do. And so now him like interviewing developers and being like, hey, what did go into this high level mechanic? That not only brings in the high level players into like more quote unquote casual type content, right? But it also helps him go ahead and build outside of just the fighting game, which I feel like at this point, you don't really need to say Justin Wong needs to be a presence outside of fighting game. He's already done that. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We also, like, he was on the Streamlabs commercial that actually won an award for how well it was done.
Yeah.
Yeah, Justin's already the household name, but I totally agree with you. It's just this, like, level of, like, hey, it's not just about the competition. Let these players like Mena and Tempest, Kakeru, like all of them are here to play. They're here. They're still competing. This is where they're focused. Like, look at that. Let's go, Mena.
Let's
right
go,
there.
Mena.
Raising the trophy.
Let's go.
And I think that that's what makes this like super awesome is.
Oh, look, you got the pop off. They got the pop off. They got the pop off. Oh my God. You know, before we move off of gameplay in general, there was actually someone that I wanted to shout out who I felt did a fantastic job this past weekend and may not have necessarily gotten their flowers. I actually want to shout out, specifically, I want to shout out Jadeln, because
yes!
I think earlier this year, or maybe last year, I don't remember when, whenever the Evo announcement was, it may have been last year, but I specifically made the comment saying that I was very frustrated by the fact that they didn't have any femme presenting or femme identifying people on the microphone specifically for the announcement show. And I just want to say I'm so happy that she got an opportunity to commentate Evo Japan, and I think she did an amazing job, and it was very, very, very enjoyable listening to her commentate not only Granblue but also Undernight and several other like recap shows. Her and Hella Brett, I believe they did Granblue. They were tired. It was super duper, super duper late, and you know, America, I think it was like freaking one or so that they were doing it, and they did it for like 7 hours along with Renge, you know, immediately after Street Fighter. And I just want to commend especially her for putting on for all of the women and femmes inside of the community and making sure that we had some type of presence at Evo. And I'm very thankful that Evo staff heard my feedback and, you know, made sure that women, especially inside of the community, had an opportunity to be seen at an international stage like this. So I'm not one of those people that says things and then doesn't go back when I'm like wrong. I see that they took the feedback. I'm glad that they hired her, and I'm really happy that they gave her several different blocks to go ahead and showcase her stuff, because I think she's a very, very talented commentator and host.
Yeah, she studies very much for a lot of the games that she commentates. She was amazing. Like, everybody in that watch party and providing... what I love about the watch party, by the way, is the analysis.
Mm.
Because it's one thing that you're able to commentate what's happening in the game, but you're 7 hours just straight up watching Evo Japan.
Yeah.
And you are literally... sitting there, you know, you don't really get a chance to communicate with the other chat, like, you know, as a regular streamer, you know, you're actually in a broadcast show setting. And it's so cool to see that that's like a level up for commentators. It's like, hey, do you know your stuff? And honestly, all of them knew their stuff.
All of them did. That's what surprised me, was that everybody was able to commentate like every game. Like, I know me and you can do it as well, but it's always great to see that the talent inside the fighting game community is so versatile. Now, we do have a lot of news, Saki.
Yes.
We've only gone over gameplay, but obviously there were very special announcements as well at this event. Do you want to go ahead and talk about them?
I am ready. So the first one up is my newest husbando, Slayer.
Not your that nose, Tabondo.
Yes. Are you ready for degenerate Saki again, Sharpie?
You got the mic, girly.
Listen, when that man brought Shannon over, I was like, it should have been me.
I just want to take this moment to let everyone listening to FGC Cast know that Saki's thirst does not reflect any and all sponsors on FGC Cast, of which we have none, by the way.
Oh, but like, first up, first and foremost, we all kind of knew it, right? Back when ABBA was released, we got a taste of a teaser, and it was the bats. We all were like, this is Slayer. This is 1000% Slayer. Now, what I love about what they did with Slayer is, and this is very similar to what they did with Johnny, they took their excerpt design and they kept it and they just improved a little bit. They added the Strive effect. And what that means is, basically, he has the cape, he has an overdrive that makes him look younger and chef's kiss, but at the end of it, that is Slayer. That is his iconic look. Nobody touches it. Nobody messes it. That is his look. So I'm very excited to see that on May 30th, we will be able to see Slayer and, you know, welcome him back to Guilty Gear. A lot of people said that just because Nagaryuki was here didn't mean that Slayer was not going to come back. And guess what? We're having him for season 3. And we're also getting season 4 plus the 3v3 mode. It is hype. It is amazing. Slayer for president.
I wanna ask you something, obviously, Saki, because I don't believe you're biased in any way, shape, or form. But is Slayer the best character to have ever been added to Guilty Gear?
The best character?
Yes.
That's Anji.
See, you out here with multiple husbandos now? You out here cheating, girl?
That's Anji. I'll never drop my love.
Okay. Respect. I think we have some more news as well. Let's get back over to Saki for the second tidbit and brand new release coming from EVO Japan.
All right, this one, all my Street Fighter fans, y'all were waiting for this one. It is the legendary demon, Akuma! That's right, he is back. And he is actually evil. Like, oh my gosh, the way this trailer was just like revealed, everybody knew. Everybody knew that it was gonna be Akuma. Everybody knew that he was coming. In fact, a lot of people honestly were just like, okay, we're just waiting to see the full trailer. But let me tell you, this character not only had a glow up for Street Fighter 6 in his design. Like, look at that. He's like the old evil grandpa. Like, I even think he gives Heihachi some fear, all right? Because of how cool he looks. Everything from his super to just how crazy his kid is insane. And you know what, Street Fighter 6 fans? I don't blame you. That's pretty cool. He looks pretty awesome.
I want to say he does look really cool. I think the thing that's craziest to me is the fact that they showcased him beating up on a child. They showed him beating up on Lily. Like, that's what he did Raging Demon on Lily. And they were like, who made this trailer? People were like, no, he's beating a child? What is beating a child? Like, here, obviously, they have him fighting Ryu. Right? But wait until they get the Raging Demon section. It's actually insane to me. It's actually nasty. And this stage looks really cool. I'ma be real with you, girl. I kinda wanna play Street Fighter 6 just to play him, bro.
I'm very excited. Oh, which that also leads to kind of like the next thing. So Akuma's actually set to release more or less when this episode goes live. And this episode, it's a few days before Combo Breaker.
Yeah.
Right?
No, this episode's actually coming out a few days after Combo Breaker.
After Combo Breaker. So we're just getting off of a tournament that literally was playing on a 2-day-old patch.
Yep.
Everybody who's registered for Street Fighter 6 for Combo Breaker received a survey, and I believe it was 81% said, let's play Akuma's patch.
That to me, that's actually demon time. That's actually what Cooper. You're telling me you reserved a hotel. You went ahead and you paid for a pass and a possible airplane ticket, bus ticket, or train ticket. and you said this character has been out for 2 days. There are possible infinites inside of this game. There are possible unblockable bugs inside of this game.
Yep.
Let's play. That's some real demonic, evil ass energy, bro.
That is, it's crazy, right? And I think that, unfortunately, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it sucks that some of these balance patches, because Granblue also has the Beatrix patch that's also gonna happen right before Combo Breaker. And I believe even right now, that's still kind of like, that was being debated while we're recording this episode, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, Combo Breaker has the worst timing when it comes to DLC and, you know, developers pumping out that balance patch or DLC. But at the same time, it's like, okay, Street Fighter fans, we see you. We see that you're the tough one.
Y'all wild. Y'all are for real wild. I would never. I would personally never, to be honest with you. So here's the thing. Rick has commented publicly on it. He stated on May 15th, it is what it is, which is the same day that, like, the Granblue patch was announced, and they said that, yeah, by the way, it's going to be coming out on May 23rd, right? Because he had already went into overdrive over, like, this whole Akuma patch. You know, he was posting it literally all of this month on and the official Combo Breaker one.
It was the best way to manage and be like, because this is not the official Capcom offline premiere, we are going to let everybody decide. Here's this opportunity to, like, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to, like celebrate and appreciate that fact this opportunity from Rick, because a lot of TOs will just say F it and they'll just do it.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas, you know, Rick is trying his hardest to be like, we know how exciting it is, but we're going to give you this opportunity to be like, let us know what you want. And you know what? I will say this, if you're at Combo Breaker or if you were at Combo Breaker, you better say thank you to your TOs
thank
for updating all those
TOs. Consoles. Oh
better
my gosh.
Better get them drinks, better get them food, better get them whatever they want, because they are going to be staying up with no sleep updating those consoles.
Yep. I also want to say, and here's the funniest thing to me personally, right? The very next day, like literally May 16th, Rick makes a tweet saying, yo, at Capcom Fighters, y'all willing to fast track some patch notes? And I just want to say, it's the year of our fucking Lord, 2024. And Capcom is not putting out patch notes. Capcom is not...
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we got translated patch
notes. Oof. I don't know how y'all play this game sometimes, bro.
Even though
I could do it. I don't know if I could do it, bro. I'm not built like that. I'm sorry.
But speaking of some more updates, Sharpie, are you ready for the next one?
I am absolutely, completely, and totally, Lord. But give me more news, girl.
So this one, I'm excited to announce, but I'm also kind of like a little bit on the fence. But this is going to be Tekken 8's newest DLC character, and she might look a little bit familiar. She, you know, ran office in Poland. She's pretty good at karate, and it's Lydia. Lydia has returned to Tekken 8, and as a DLC character for the second DLC character for this season's pass. Now, when it comes to Tekken 8, with this new update that's going to come up, there's of course like a new story mode. There's going to be obviously new balances. There's going to be new costumes. Like, there's a whole bunch of cool content that's coming. Obviously, we just got off the patch from with Eddie Gordo. That was the first character of this season. But we're going to be getting Lydia. Now, Sharpie, as cool as it is to see Lydia in Tekken 8, you know, I figured she would be in here because she was introduced in Tekken 7. It didn't feel right to have her not come into Tekken 8 and be left back in Tekken 7. My only thing is that Lydia players have had to pay for the DLC in Tekken 7 and now here for Tekken 8. And it almost just feels like a little bit frustrating because she could have just been a base roster character.
Yeah, I will say I'm happy with a lot of the updates. They said there's a free season one update. They're saying they're giving you new story. They said they're giving you new characters. Like, I get it. I get the idea. I think it's just... It's always weird, right? When you support a game as I have the past, and you're like, bro, why would she not come out? Like, it really just feels like, to be very blunt with you, it really feels like Tekken 8 wasn't ready to launch yet. It feels like it was fast-tracked to hit, like, certain guidelines, because if it had come out, it would have missed Combo Breaker, it would have missed Evo Japan, and it couldn't miss Evo Japan, you know? Like, that's kind of what it feels like. I know they were working on it for a really long time, and I get it, but it really feels like, okay, they were trying to hit timelines, and I'm happy that this character's out. I'm happy that Lydia was announced. I'm happy that, like, so many people are getting a really cool update for the game. But, like, and this is the worst thing about it. I just think Tekken 8 is not my type of game. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to whoever that pisses off. I'm sorry to all the people that have been trying to get me to play Tekken 8.
You are not the only person. You are not the only person. Oh, and one of the things that I feel like a lot of people have theorized, right, is that with Tekken 7 being the way it played out, very slow, you had your movement, yeah. Tekken 8 is a way more aggressive game than a lot of Tekken players are used to.
Yeah.
Right? So you have that. Then you have on top of everything, you know, this heat system that really makes you more on your guard. Like, this is that comeback opportunity, that comeback gimmick, you could say, right? And now, I don't play a lot of Tekken. I have been paying attention to a lot of the Tekken TOs and a lot of the Tekken players. Like, even right now, to run online tournaments, it's really like a struggle.
Yeah.
When it shouldn't be a struggle, you know? Especially with, like, you know, you come from an era, and I'm going to call it an era,
okay,
where what we were in with the pandemic, this should have been the lesson of, like, hey, we've been online for a good while. Online tournaments, you know, are on that same, like, field in terms of, like, they're just as many of them as there is offline.
Yeah.
And it's just with Lydia going back to her release, it just feels like, you know, you put in all of these other characters that were in Tekken 7 that were released during Tekken 7.
Yeah.
You introduced the new characters with mechanics from characters that were new to Tekken 7. And then here you have Lydia, who, you know, again, happy she's in, but she's not going to play any different except fitting Tekken 8 mechanics.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I feel like between what was going on with the pandemic and also just the timing of, like, hey, the Tekken 7 tour is going to end. We want to start fresh. We don't want to launch a game in the middle of a tour.
Yeah. Which just for the record, makes complete and total sense to, I think, both yourself and to me. You know, it's not like either of us are questioning the developer when it comes to that at all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think that we would prefer to have seen Lydia as a base roster and then see more of either a returning character from an older series or even a new character, because we don't even know how many new characters could still be potential.
I just think that's so much more well received, especially when you're talking about a game that you don't necessarily play, when you're talking about an entire group of people who you're trying to convince to play. Like, showcasing brand new characters that people have never seen inside of your entire IP before as DLC characters is always a really good look. And I know this kind of goes counterintuitive to the thing we were saying before about Guilty Gear new characters and KOF new characters and stuff like that, but I think it's just because... I think it's truthfully just because Tekken just ended off of a really big bang, and I expect a lot from them. I don't expect a lot from Guilty Gear, because Guilty Gear I consider anime FGC, and I actually don't even think that they're as popular as big as Tekken is. I don't think that their franchise or their IP is as strong as Tekken's is.
Correct.
Like, Tekken's is very strong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a higher bar that they have to clear for me personally, for me to be, like, really wowed. And ultimately, it fights them. But I will say, for the record, I do really like the free updates. That is a huge clap moment for me, because that is, hey, we see you, TOs. No more money. Don't worry about it. The photo mode, yes. Give us more opportunity to be casual ass bitches inside of this game. Do that, please. I love it. Also, new stages, new story. That's great. Mm-hmm. The only thing I'm missing, and honestly, if Dawn was still on this podcast, she would say this too, because she was like a stickler for this, but PvE content.
Yes.
Is that inside of Tekken 8 at all?
So you do have the ghost battles, but not necessarily like a challenge mode, or like, you know, not even like with the volleyball or the dodge mode.
That's kind of disappointing.
Ball. Yeah. And you know, like there is that like lining of, hey, you know, people aren't really playing the PvE, but like, believe it or not, that's a perfect way to bring in a casual, way more casual audience versus having to only focus on like online practice ghost mode. Because even though it is, you know, an AI at the end of the day for the ghost mode, you still need to get that from someone. Like, someone has to have played and then created that ghost for them to be able to actually, for you to be able to fight. So.
No, for sure. And, you know, ultimately, kind of coming to the end of the segment, EVO Japan overall, fantastic showcase. Amazing showcase of not just fighting game news, but also, like, the American talent that exists inside of the world right now. Or I should say North American talent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mina is from the Dominican Republic, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so is that considered Central America, or is that still North America?
So it depends on, honestly, it really depends on the context. So usually Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Cuba, and any of the islands technically are known as Caribbean.
Okay.
But in the case of, like, for example, tournaments, they've always been known, like, for North America. Now,
That's a crazy option select. I'm not going to hold you.
And you know what's crazy? Sometimes, even when you say North America, some TOs in their tournaments will be like, hey, the connection's, like, really bad. Because, you know, someone's from Canada, and then you're all trying to connect to someone to, like, the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
It can be pretty rough, depending on the netcode. But
not in Skullgirls!
Not in Skullgirls, exactly! or Guilty Gear!
Not in Guilty Gear, not in Rollback Games, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But yeah, no, I hear you. Okay, so we're taking the win as Americans, right?
Oh, 1,000%. He is living in, I think he's actually in New York now.
Okay.
So he is actually in America, but he'll always rep DR. And honestly,
that makes sense. No, it makes complete and total sense.
We'll always rep our flags.
Yeah, you should. And you should, because it's like, yo, if you were brought up here, like, that's where you should be. Like, I represent Richmond, Virginia all the time. Not because that's where I was born, but that's because that's where I went to college. That's where I started competing. That's where I found, like, my fighting game community home, you know? And I traveled a lot up and down the East Coast and even parts of, like, the Midwest and West Coast. But I still consider myself, like, an RVA girl just because, you know? So it is what it is. But, yo, good stuff to both Tempest and Mena RD. Great news to Guilty Gear players, Tekken players, and, of course, Street Fighter, like, players. Congratulations on getting someone inside of Street Fighter who will beat up children. Congratulations on getting a grandpa, a younger version of your GILFs, inside of Guilty Gear. And hey, congratulations to you, Tekken players, who actually, I think they actually won the update battle. I actually think they got the best update because they got free updates, you know? So that's huge. But let me just say, now it's time to really get into the thing that we're here today to discuss and talk about.
I'm ready.
Are you?
I'm ready, Sharpie.
Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be so for real with you, Saki. The rest of this podcast, we're already 30 minutes in. Usually, this is the point where we're getting ready to end the podcast. You know? Like, this is the point where we usually are done talking. But I'm going to tell you something. We got news about multiverses, and this podcast is going live on the same day multiverse is releasing, so we're updating y'all with some Rift Mode updates. Y'all heard me just say that, by the way, multiverses doesn't have PvE. Well, guess what now does? Now, multiverses has PvE, meaning that you can play with a friend inside of Rift, and you can actually go through and do several different things, not in any way, shape, or form even related to the game. Have you heard of Capture the Flag? That's in multiverses. Have you heard of Target Practice? That's in multiverses. Do you want to get your best friend and go ahead and beat up some AI and get very special prizes? That's in multiverses. All of the stuff that people have been clamoring and asking for, not just inside of multiverses, but inside of fighting games in general, is now coming inside of multiverses on the launch. On this day of release, literally we're recording on May 18th, but this episode will be live on May 28th, meaning that a brand new opportunity for you to play a game that has been in hiatus for almost an entire year is now available. Download multiverses, play it. Like, you can see the Target Practice. You can see the opportunities to go ahead and test out the brand new Unreal game engine. Play multiverses. It's so good. And I'm really not even doing it justice. There's several other different things. They completely overhauled their perk system so that now inside of like Rift Battles, these mutations allow you to do things. They have these mini games, which you just saw. They have challenges, which allow you to like fight with different debuffs. And this is the co-op mode that I was talking about. It's like leaders and buddies. And it's honestly, it's cute as heck because it's Jake and Finn, you know, your favorite Finn from Adventure Time, Saki, singing a song about being leaders and friends and beating up your like buddies and stuff, and how you can have 1v2 battles now inside of the game, which once again, 100% free to play. Like that's still a crazy selling point to me. Like all of this is free.
Mm-hmm.
There's no extra money to play the PvE mode. None of that. The only thing that costs money is the cosmetics, and you don't need cosmetics. This mode actually unlocks cosmetics for you for free. So if you just want to play with your friend and you don't even want to play competitive, you can now unlock brand new game modes and stuff exclusively with your best friend, which means Saki, we don't have to play ranked, girly. We don't have to do that. I don't have to embarrass you.
That's wild because I have a character that I'm going to let you talk about in a little bit that I think is going to beat your buns.
Oh, yeah?
But what I do want to just really quickly touch here for that free, that PvE mode, I'm getting a lot of invasions from Mortal Kombat 1 vibes.
Mm.
And I think that really is awesome that they're going to not have a similar idea, but it's just that there's PvE content.
Yeah.
There's a whole amount of just ability that you could do with this content. Like, all the modes are just completely different.
Yeah.
They're going to feel refreshing. You can play with the different characters. Like, this is kind of why I feel when I look at the future of fighting games, multiverses and 2X KO are going to be at the top simply because they're going to be just like not just because they have really strong IPs, but because they literally have a new flavor that is giving off into the fighting game like scene itself.
Yeah.
That no other game right now is actually taking advantage
of. I completely and totally agree, to be honest with you. That's very, very true. It's hard to admit, but it is true. Mostly just because it's like I just finished, like, now, yesterday, basically, I recorded the Triple KO podcast, which went live at the time of this recording. This recording will be live on May 28th, but basically, last week after this will be published on May 28th, the recording will be live on May 21st. And inside of there, I just talked about platform fighters, and discussing the history of platform fighters made me realize how much of a chokehold Smash had on platform fighters. Seeing the ways that Multiverses is going to differentiate themselves, not only from Smash, but also from Rivals of Aether and Brawlhalla, which are the two games that, like, Heavy made it so that you can make platform fighters. Because there were platform fighters before that, like PlayStation All-Stars Brawl is a very real game that happened. You know, like that was real, that happened. And it was not very well received by a large amount of people, you know? So it's like, to see that now people can make a polished product like this and it can actively start competing with Smash in a very real way. Not to say that Rivals and Brawlhalla aren't competing with Smash and even like Frame Makers, but Multiverses is kind of on a next level. And I actually think to be very honest with you, Saki, I think especially with some of the news that I have to come out with for Multiverses, I actually think Multiverses is a very heavy contestant for beating the Super Smash Brothers series, to be honest. And I know what I'm saying. Like, I get it. I used to compete inside of Melee. I know how that's going to sound, and I know how people are going to take that. And I stand by that statement. I think Multiverses is really putting their best foot forward with this launch. And of course, you know, on day of launch, I'm gonna watch something go wrong and everyone be like, Sharpie, you were wrong, and it's gonna suck. But if that doesn't happen, I'm gonna sit here beaming inside the chat, being like, Ayo, Sparrow, I told you so. I told you so, Sparrow. I told you so. You know, but that isn't all the news we have, obviously. We have a lot, and I mean a lot more news. Firstly, before they even showcased that Rift news, we actually got a brand new character inside of the game. And you're probably sitting here wondering, Sharpie, who's that brand new character? Well, I'll tell you. And he has to rhyme with Doker. Can you guess who it is, Saki?
I don't even think that's a real word.
It doesn't matter that that's not a real word. It made you laugh. You're supposed to laugh. And if you don't laugh, I got some gas right here for you, girly. Joker is now inside of Multiverses, playable literally right now. Now, look, this was actually showcased specifically inside of like a bunch of different clues and stuff that they showcased on their,
socials?
Yeah, it was all over their socials, I think. But, like, they had little things. The big thing I want to actually showcase, and I froze fame exactly on this, was because they actually have, up there in the top right, they have a Powerpuff Girls card. On this frame right here.
Yes!
Now, a lot of people probably figured it out because I have the music playing in the background here. Because, like, at the time of the recording, like, obviously, you know, this song is already available on their YouTube right now. They have not announced Powerpuff Girls as of the time of this recording, once again, May 18th. There is a very, very strong case for Powerpuff Girls being inside of the game right now. And everyone is kind of losing their stuff over the idea of that. But I digress. Joker seems like a really cool character. They have a lot of, like, really fun stuff with him. They've showed off, like, him. This is a video of him, like, kind of hijacking the Batcave and taking advantage of all the stuff inside of there. But they also showed us a gameplay video. They just kind of, like, showed a little bit of gameplay. This is what we got shortly after he was announced. They showed off some of his costumes, which was, you know, the Batman who smiles. They have a couple of other classic costumes as well. And, like, even some of his taunties. I'm calling them taunties. That's a League of Legends reference. I'm sure most of our viewers don't understand. But it's really, really interesting the way that they showcased all of this. And he is going to be a mage character. So the whole idea and what the showcase is showing right here is that Harley, who's an assassin, works very, very well with mages. And his moveset really does complement Harley's. So it's kind of funny to, like, canonically have, like, a supervillain. I actually think he's one of the very first supervillains that we have inside of the game. I think the only other villain that we have is Gizmo.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's, like, and to be honest, he's not even, like, a villain. He's just, you know, kind of whatever. They had a little, like, Batman who smiles, and then he's, like, saying, they just call me the Batman who dances, and I'm like, okay. This was also shown off inside the Discord, which, for the record, in the very last episode, I had a really, really harsh critique of the Multiverses Q&A inside of the Discord. And I just, once again, want to say, for the record, Multiverses team and PFG, this was a very good showcase. I'm really happy that you all had an opportunity to show off actual videos. I'm really happy that there was a voice call this time and there was some more transparency about what was going on. It definitely felt better. I'm very excited for hopefully having video showcases in general where we actually get to see the developers and we get to have that level of transparency with it as well. But I was just happy to hear voices. Like, it was such a step up from before. I feel like that's the bar for me. Like, there was some amount of effort there, and it really felt like there was effort there before. Previously, just with the text chat, it felt like it was beneath the bar, to be honest. And I really, this is me just talking to myself, not to any specific community management or even to Warner Brothers in totality. I really hope the intention of having that text Q&A was not to lower the bar.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope that was not the case.
I'm really glad to see that there's a lot of there's this communication. My hope is that they continue on this level of communication.
For sure.
Especially because, you know, obviously this is to hype up the game, you know, starting out. Like, again, Joker is really cool. And then same thing with the other character that we haven't covered just yet, but you know, still.
A lot of news,
exactly. But I think that what I really just want to make sure of is that, you know, when the game does fully launch, what's the communication going to look out? Because I feel that, like, the communication is going to be, like, the pressure is going to be a lot hotter because of the fact that the game is going to be live.
Yeah.
And that means that there's going to be people more vocal than just, hey, we want this character, or, hey, you know, this character looks great. There's going to be, and, like, this is, again, just because I'm very familiar with the other IPs that Warner Brothers owns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the one thing that tends to kind of, like, I see that pattern is that, you know, we're so excited for all the new content. Great. But then once that new content starts launching and releasing, it gets harder to communicate. And it's not the fault of the devs. It's really just, like, there's more pressure on them, so they have to be more careful.
Yeah, and I understand that to a certain degree, which is why I'm trying really hard to, like, be fair. You know, even, and I'm impartial, even from my, like, position as a Multiverses ambassador and someone that, like, actively talks to a developing team and, like, the publishing team, you know, like, I want to be fair and unbiased for the community that trusts me and listen to me, but I also want to be fair and unbiased, and I want to be, truthfully, I just want to be fair to the development team, because I know how hard they're working right now. With that being said, I did kind of peek on their LinkedIn earlier, and I saw that their team numbers actually increased from, like, it used to be at, like, 8 to 10 was the size of what PFG used to reflect. It has recently been reflected to show that there's 11 to 50 people possibly working at this company now, which would make sense.
Wow.
Yeah, so it seems as though I have high hopes specifically for this launch, and it's one of the reasons why I've been really comfortable pushing Multiverses lately, is because I am now seeing that they have a bigger team. Possibly, right? 11 to 50 is a very broad number. That could mean they have 12. It could mean they have 15. But based off of everything that I've seen, knowing that they moved to a brand new engine, knowing that, like, on LinkedIn it shows that there's a minimum of, like, 47 people that are currently working at PFG, it looks like they do have the proper staffing to deal with launch this time around. So,
let's go!
Because I'm only comfortable sharing this because it is public on LinkedIn. You know, if this had been privately conveyed to me, I would not be sharing it, type of thing. But yeah, Saki, I really do feel like, in general, the team is equipped for the launch. And, you know, if something happens and it's launch day and this episode comes out and I look silly, I look silly. But I believe in PFG right now. I think that, especially with that very last Discord call and this really amazing Joker showcase, I'm really happy, like, where they're with the momentum they're moving forward towards. And you know what's crazy is we actually have even more news outside of just this. Even more.
Girl,
the next 15 to 20 minutes are exclusively Multiverses news. So starting off with this brand new stage that they just showed off, they showed off three different stages. The first of which is the city of Townsville. The theme of which is playing in the background of this stream right now, because that's how hype it is. You can see Mojo Jojo there. You can see City Hall. You can see Mojo Jojo's little telecommunication thing in the background. One of the only things you can't see is a skyscraper that him lives in. You know?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing that's kind of cut off in this picture. That's very, very unique. So this is something that I'm going to talk to you about and give you the theory for after we go past this stage. But I actually think Mojo Jojo's saucer is going to be a platform that you can jump on. I think that's going to be interactable. I don't think it's just going to be in the background. And the reason why I think that is because of the very next stages that we get. The first of which is Dexter's Laboratory. which is a really pretty stage in and of itself. You know, this isn't the first time we saw it. We kind of got a sneak peek of it earlier, and we talked about this in an earlier episode where everyone's like, that looks like Dexter's lab in the background. You know, they confirmed it literally after the Joker reveal, but they also confirmed that there's going to be a version with platforms.
Ooh, that's actually cruel to like actually see.
Yeah. So they're going to be different versions of stages, and it's not like there aren't any versions inside of the game that already have one with and one without platforms. Like, I believe that the stage, specifically based off of the Steven Universe, I think it's like the Gem Arena or something like that, that stage already has removable platforms. So it's not even like the concept doesn't exist. There's a stage with platforms, there's a stage without platforms. There's one for a Wonder Woman stage as well. It's like the area where the... where I'm blanking right now because I haven't had a chance to play the game in so long, but that stage literally has one with like a moving platform and one without a moving platform. So there are multiple levels to all of this, but it's just nice to see them confirm these two stages. It also gives a significantly stronger case for us having Powerpuff Girls inside of the game, and even possibly Mojo Jojo, to be honest. Like, this is a very, very strong case. This is a...
I think the only thing that I will say to you is I actually don't think that's a platform for Mojo Jojo.
You can believe that, but you also play Fen.
That's crazy. I was actually going to say that was Mojo Jojo is a special move because you could see that someone's in there and the only figure that looks like that is Mojo Jojo.
Okay.
But okay, Sharpie. Okay, I see you.
I don't have a single nice thing to say about Fen players, bro. Nah, you got it. I hear you.
I'm in love with this map in particular. I don't see myself as someone that's going to be like super hardcore into competitive. I think that this is going to be just like more of like a casual game for me, even on a content perspective.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say though, that when you add platforms into these stages, it's gonna be hype.
Yeah.
Seeing how competitive it gets.
Oh no, for absolute positive. Absolutely positive. Like, I am in every way, shape, and form incredibly excited for not just this, but the very next bit of news that we have coming up, which is the fact that they went ahead and added a brand new character inside of the game. You're probably sitting here like, Sharpie, they already announced Joker. Who else could they ask? They could add Banana Guard from Adventure Time inside of the game. This Little Miss Adventure Time. Now, there's literally a phrase where he's like, I'm not just a joke character, am I? And I'm like, bro, this fourth wall stuff. Come on now. Definitely time to kind of go bananas. Now, he is a bruiser. He has a very, very interesting playset, but as a bruiser, he kind of excels in general at commanding the space around him, at out damaging and sustaining tanks, and kind of like making sure that he can brute force his way into most engagements. A lot of the negatives that it seems like he has from his moveset appear to mostly just be confined to his range, which is typical for bruisers. You know, that's something that you kind of expect from a bruiser inside of a showcase like this. So I want to say he really does look like a very interesting character, and I just gotta ask, like, Saki, what are you thinking when you see this character? Because you already play an Adventure Time character. I'm not familiar with his character from Adventure Time. Do you know anything about his character?
Yes, I do, actually. So Banana Guard is very well known to be Princess Bubblegum's royal guard, and for the guard for the Candy Kingdom. Very much something that's like really cool about Adventure Time is that there's a lot of fourth wall breaking, especially in some of like the more jokes. Later on in the seasons for Adventure Time, it starts to heavily go into like a narrative, but earlier on in the seasons of Adventure Time, there was a lot of breaking the fourth wall. There wasn't really like a linear story. It was more of like, these are all the characters that live in the Land of Ooh. I love Adventure Time, so seeing the Banana Guard was kind of like, yo, bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-A. I probably spelled that really wrong. But anyways.
B-A-N-A-N-A, yes, this is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes! And I just wanted to just mention and put on the record here on May 18th, Sharpie will lose to my Banana Guard when Multiverse releases.
You know, Sassy, I wasn't even going to hold you to that because we said it before we started recording, but I'm happy that you put it here inside the podcast so that when I post a picture from our set of me beating you 10 to 1, and you're like, I got one, I'm going to show the full freaking set. And your joke character is going to lose to my mechanics.
I'm going to taunt you in the clip and then be like, God. Yeah, look at me.
Oh, that's so suck. Saki, so BM, bro. Saki is so bad bananas. Oh my God.
Speaking of bananas, didn't you get a cool kit?
I'm so happy that you brought it up, Saki. So, Multiverses, in order to prepare people and kind of tease this, not only did they showcase the Banana Guard originally inside of the Rift video, but they also went ahead and sent some people bananas. Like, here is a clip of one of the bananas. This was actually sent, someone posted this like 2 hours before I got my banana, but like Ajax was out here making banana tweets, talking about needing bananas. Corey, otherwise known as Thalion, the community manager on the Warner Brothers side, like literally just posted bananas. And then they sent me a random banana with a Multiverses sticker. And I was like, what is going on? You know, it was weird. It was really confusing. And then they showcased the banana trailer and I was like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. Oh, okay, we're getting a banana. And what's crazy is that they actually said, by the way, there's more to come. Like, this isn't everything. Prepare. And I said, hey, yo, what? What? There's more? What do you mean there's more? I don't know what else we're gonna get. And unfortunately, we're not gonna have time to discuss it. Like, because as of recording this podcast, we usually record on Fridays. Because I had to record on Triple KO, we unfortunately had to push it to Saturday. But it was one of those things where I was like, what else could they possibly announce? And, you know, we can't record on like Monday or Tuesday to see what they announce because it's one of those things where it's like, you're getting ready to go to Combo Breaker, which actually, Saki, before we talk about our final topic of the evening, why don't we talk about you and how you actually managed to fund your way to Combo Breaker this year? Because you're going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, shout outs to my lovely community, specifically Dom Presses Buttons. Thank you so much again. I set up a goal. So like for everybody's like record, and for that it shows on the record, I usually try to budget really well. I'm very picky about that. Mostly because I don't like to travel if I feel like I can't really like feel comfortable financially.
Yeah.
So when I do these goals, I do it more because, you know, it does help a lot because then I can come home and be like, okay, this money that I saved is going to be able to be saved, you know, for reals.
Yeah.
And, you know, not having like a full on sponsor and not having like a lot of stuff that doesn't get covered because, you know, again, even though we're like evil commentators and things like that, you know, these events are still trying to make ends meet and it's usually coming down to like that they don't really cover everything. So with that in mind, I set up this goal and I honestly thought that it was just going to be like a couple of bucks in. I did like a subathon. I did like different activities. I even have like different goals on stream.
No, you worked for this, girly. You worked for this.
I first saw it was like I think it was like $150 contributed to my Ko-fi, and I was like, oh my gosh, Dom, like what is going on? And then on like the Friday morning that we were like fully funded, I just saw that it was like fully filled, and I was like, what? No.
At first you were like, oh, it must be a bug.
yeah, exactly. I was like, there's no way that this actually happened. But no, you know, we got it fully funded. And honestly, like, that really helps. And we'll still have like those fundraisers in the future. But it's a really satisfying and like proud moment to know that like if I needed to have a fundraiser, whether it be for charity, whether it be for, you know, a personal like fundraiser to get to these events, mm-hmm. my community is there, and I really appreciate that.
Congratulations again, Saki, and I just personally want to say thank you to Dom Presses Buttons and all of the other people that also donated to this. Saki, I just want to say for the record, you're a very responsible person, and I think the decision that you made to originally not necessarily go to Combo Breaker when you knew that funds were tight for other things was very, very, very adult for you, and is one of the reasons I have you on this podcast. It's because you're very responsible, you're very organized, and you're very professional, and you make hard decisions when you have to. And honestly, you sacrifice a lot to make sure that the community is able to have a certain standard, and this show is able to have a certain standard. And so I'm just so incredibly happy that your community treated you the same way that you try to treat not just them, but everybody in the fighting game community. So congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
Let's go ahead and get to our final tidbit of news today. Now, Saki, this news is something that was very heavily debated on Twitter. Do you want to go ahead and take it away?
I do. So, we all know that we've been covering 2XKO. Well, recently, they have posted a tweet that showed an Illaoi combo filled with assists and everything. And then they posted the notations for said combo. Now, this did cause quite a bit of a stir online for a couple of reasons. One, in my particular opinion, it's kind of crazy that they're releasing these notations when League has been known that their builds that they've done testing for doesn't really end up being the final product.
Yeah,
and that's usually the case.
That's weird, isn't that?
Yeah, that's what happened with, and I think I mentioned this one to you, Sharpie, that's what happened with Lee Sin's original, I think it was an updated balance kit. So on the like PTV servers, he was given like specific combos for his and I'm by the way, I'm not talking about like fighting games. I'm actually talking
about
League of Actual Legends.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm just
exactly.
I'm thinking about it because it's like I was there when Lee Sin got reworked. And I remember that patch coming out. I never played on PTB. And just for like people who don't play League of Legends and are actually very healthy, fully functional individuals that somehow still listen to our podcast, PBE is actually the public beta build, basically, for League of Legends. It's where they test a lot of the changes that they make inside of the game. And you can get access to it literally just by changing the client version that you have. It used to be something that you could only like get through having access from certain rioters and stuff, and they would give you access to it after the fact. Or if you were like a special pro player, you were high enough and like master or challenger, they would give you access. But recently they've just let it open to everybody just because the game is so big and they're like, it's better just to have more people testing than not, right? And there
exactly.
is a ranked mode on PBE as well. Like, I don't play it because I'm not crazy, but some people do. Some people enjoy doing that, and Riot watches those rankings and they make changes based off those rankings and they adjust changes based off those rankings. So, you know, if you want to get a character nerf, go play on PBE. Go do it.
But, exactly. So yeah. Going back into kind of like what this means, right? So when Lee Sin's rework did make it to the live servers, a lot of the combos and those skills were actually different, and rightfully so, because again, you know, what's on that those beta builds is to be tested and then adjusted before it hits the live servers. So to see this right now, the game's not even in a publicly beta build version, right? We've only been seeing it at these like conventions and at these tournaments, and then a little bit online. And it's just interesting that we're already getting a set of combos that, to be honest, may or may not work by the time the live servers come out, which at this point, keeping on record, May 18th, all right, we're going to be going back to this once 2XKO
is released. We have set so many predictions inside of this specific episode. I'm really happy that especially last episode, we were like, we're not covering EVO Japan, come back in 2 weeks. You know, that was the smartest thing we ever did. I actually want to go ahead and talk about, because you talked about like why it was kind of interesting to post this, because you're basically stating that nothing with Illaoi is going to change anymore. You're stating that publicly at a point in time when you've not even given us a date like a hard date for the possible beta test or invitational test. I actually want to go ahead and bring up something that someone else inside of the community actually noticed, specifically by the name of Dacid Bro. Dacid Bro is a well-known tournament organizer. He actually competes inside of Catherine and a few other anime games, but he went ahead and gave some kind of input here. He said, every input system has problems. This one just has more than others. Hoping Numpad can take over by launch for intuitive use, international use, and for clarity of highly complex inputs. I've played a lot of games. I've used every community notation. Take an intermediate OS fuzzy grab. Written DB UB DB throw 171 throw. Spoken down back up back down back throw 171 throw. Written or speaking, numpad notation is clear and invokes snappy directionality if you want to visualize a numpad. He wrote a lot. I'm sorry. It's very yappy, unfortunately. Like, no shade Dacid, but you wrote a lot, bro. It definitely could have been snappier here. If you had put it all in numpad notation, I could have been done speaking. But he continues. It gets so much worse when you're trying to tell people how to improve their, assumptions. If dash DP isn't coming out of shield, you should consider adding crosscut. It's a DP both sides where you don't do the whole DP. It's just corners. And that turns into, with numpad notation, if dash DP isn't coming out, try 661313H, which admittedly is easier. I do agree with that statement. He then continues, and then you have to tell people how to baby the input reader, whatever it is. If you do walk fireball and it gives a dragon punch, you have to add a back input to trick the system. Or with numpad notation, you could say, if walk fireball gives you DP, try 641236. You can add or subtract every angle instantly, which is, once again, very, very valid. You know, whatever 2XKO uses, I'll always prefer numpad. It has been valuable for teaching intermediate and advanced techniques countless times across any language barrier, and people learn it easily. The only thing I disagree with here, by the way, is the fact that people learn numpad notation easily. That is propaganda. That is untrue. Nobody does. I can't believe this man said that, bro, with the fullness of his chest, too. He just typed that shit. He said, people learn it easily. I said, hey, Audacity, that's kind of cap. I ain't even gonna hold you, bro. That's a little cappy. That's a little cappy. It's just a little bit. But in all seriousness, I agree with just about everything else he says. I think that numpad notation is significantly better for the long term, and I have even applauded 2XKO's, like, I want to say intersectionality and internationality acceptance, especially with accessibility, because they have been posting their videos inside of Portuguese, inside of French, inside of several other languages to make sure that international players, like Japanese, French, Portuguese, Spanish, they have videos translated into just about every single one of those languages to make sure that people can understand it and get ready to play. It's strange to me that the notation that they showcase only uses English. That's super weird to me.
That is, I think that that's going to be the struggle for a lot of players that are coming from the international side. Now, maybe not. And the reason why I say maybe not is because after looking at like the actual control scheme for 2XKO, if those letters or if those actual starting letters for those movesets or for those buttons don't change, then you can technically kind of get away with it, and you just, now you created a unique notation just for 2XKO.
Yeah.
Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It depends, right? It depends on how many people are going to be able to access it. Is it easy to learn, right? Like, we kind of saw, like, the T means handshake tag to Darius. Okay, does that, like, will that translate properly to the other languages and countries that are going to be playing this game? I think more than anything, though, is that it brings up some really interesting, like, if you look at it from an outside perspective and you really dive into it, how we treat notations, and kind of also goes back as a commentator's why sometimes not always referring to the notation isn't the best way to commentate. Like, it's great that you're able to do numpad notation. It's great that you can say, you know, 6-4 whatever. And I'm not going to go down that road because I hate numbers.
I just like saying 2P. That's funny.
Exactly,
to
me too.
I like 2P, saying 2P, 2K, bro.
6P, you know, like, it's great that, like, you definitely sound, like, really cool.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, as someone that's been commentating Melty Blood, I feel that one of the things that has helped me stand out in Melty Blood is that I can communicate to the audience what's happening on the screen without going into that technicality. Mm-hmm. Of course, my co-commentators are able to hop in and actually describe those notations. Mm-hmm. But when you're just a viewer, like, really interested in a game, it gets really, really overwhelming.
Oh, for sure.
And really quickly.
Absolutely. And, like, ultimately, to kind of, like, clean out this, to kind of, like, go ahead and crush, you know, this final section of this very, very, very long episode here, I think that it's still entirely too early inside of the game's lifespan to be establishing notation, especially through a tweet. Like, that's not... I doubt that that was the intention of whoever approved this tweet on their social media or community management team. And they followed it up with, like, a whole joke post of, like, a little crab, like, out there just being like, this is what he thinks of your numpad notation. And I was like, yeah, bro, they're memeing. This is the craziest bait I've ever seen by myself, and I got caught by a crab, dude. That's crazy. But was it really bait if we had a really good conversation about the history of numpad notation, why it matters, and why accessibility in general is important inside the fighting game community? Is it really bait, some would ask? To which we would say, hey, doesn't matter, end of cast. Thank you so much, everybody, for coming out to yet another episode of FGC Cast. Super great to have you here. Saki, I just want to say thank you so much, as always, for being so super awesome. You guys may not know this, but, like, the setup for this specific episode took 2 hours. It usually doesn't take that long, by the way. It usually never takes that long. We are usually up and at 'em, and at most 30 minutes, 45 minutes. But Saki was such a trooper because we had so much Multiverses news come in literally last minute. Literally last minute. And I want to say once again, like I say every single episode, Saki, where can people find you if they want to go ahead and say thank you for putting up with the craziness that is FGC Cast?
So you can check me out at Saki Sakura TV. I have been really hyped to be building my otaku channel on YouTube. So definitely be sure to check it out. Also, we got Twitch, we got TikTok, we got our Discord, we got all the places, all the platforms, so make sure you come and tune in.
As always, and I just want to thank all of our viewers. We actually broke over 200 subscribers on YouTube. Thank you very, very much for that. Our very last episode, I actually think, broke 200 views and was actually retweeted by Maximilian. I especially want to take this moment to publicly thank everybody at Triple KO, especially Matt McMuscles, for making sure that I was able to promote my web series, which is literally live today. Check it out. It's on my main YouTube channel. Just as an aside, I did work very, very hard on it. It actually focuses on my journey as a tournament organizer inside of the fighting game community. I filmed it at Xanadu, which was one of the very first venues that gave me a chance to, like, run it and run fighting game community events, which I basically ran for 4 to 5 years or so there, like, even through pandemic. And I was very proud of the time that I spent working there directly with VG Bootcamp, Gimmer and Apostle. And I also want to thank Justin Wong and Maximilian, who have been really, really cool about, like, promoting not just this podcast. Maximilian directly retweeted an episode, like, our last episode of the podcast, which was huge. We got, like, 25,000 impressions on Twitter, where we only have, like, what, 200 followers on Twitter, right, Saki?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, 25,000 is literally, I think, 200,000, no, I'm sorry, 2,000% more, like, then we have following us, which is crazy to think about. And you guys went ahead and boosted our numbers for the very last episode, which always helps because we are in the process of trying to make sure that we're able to get additional funds, not only for personal projects that we're working on, but also for truthfully, just we want to be able to give back to the community in a very real way, and we'll be announcing more of that later this year. But check out my web series. I would appreciate it. I worked really hard on it. I spent a lot of money on it, and it's something that I'm really proud of, because I know that there's somebody else inside the community, some other femme or non-binary person who is currently going through some form of growth inside of their life right now, and they're trying to find a sense of community. And I really hope that they see this video and understand that there is a sense of community inside of gaming, and you don't have to be a player in order to experience that sense of community. That's what I was trying to show inside of the series, and that's what I tried to communicate inside of the pilot. Everybody, I want to thank you so much for coming out to yet another episode of FGC Cast. Saki, before we go ahead and end, let me ask, because we already asked where we could find you, but do you have any final thoughts?
At the end of the day, I'm going to be beating Sharpie with my banana.
That's wild! That's wild! Saki, I'ma see you in 1v1, and gamers, I'ma see you offline.